the Ink Sink. I am Annie.
I'm Kaylee.
And this is our readers and writers and lovers of the written word and the spoken word and
the word.
Other words. All words. Podcast. I'm workshopping, Kaylee.
We're figuring out a new tag phrase. Tagline?
I'm trying to figure it out. Yeah.
Tagline, subtitle. Catchphrase, subtitle.
Catchphrase, that's what we're trying to figure out.
Read books.
I'm working on it. Well, apparently people thought when I said publishing that I meant something very specific, and they were wrong, because then, like, the thing that they asked if our podcast was about was not that. So I'm like, okay, publishing is the wrong word. This is the podcast for the rest of us about stuff. I think that's accurate. Thank you, Kaylee.
I'm here to help, Annie.
Nailed it.
I mean, great.
It's for everybody. Like, I tell people when they ask, I say it's about books and also just like fiction in general and also, you know, digital media and publishing. Like, I don't know how else to say
it. Like the act and industry of publication. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know why. I don't feel like, what was the thing that they thought it was about? I'm just curious.
They thought it was about music. Publishing music, because you publish music.
I suppose
in
that's
the same
fair.
Way.
And that's fair.
I get it, and I don't want to take away from that. That's so true. But also,
but don't you usually in those terms hear it about about music being produced before you would hear about it being published?
Sure.
That does seem like the likelier term.
I'm not sure. I wasn't gonna question.
I mean, that's fair. That's fair.
I wasn't gonna be like, you fool. You prescriptivist moron!
Buffoonery!
It didn't work out for me in that way, but next time I'm gonna have you on call. It'll be a phone a friend, and I'm gonna be like, hold tight, Kaylee, this man thinks publishing means music. Get him!
I'm ready. I'm ready, world. Also, I do want to apologize. I do have a Sprite from a place, and you will hear the ice. Deal with it.
ASMR coming at you live from the Ink Sink.
Yeah, I needed moisture.
You got it. Can you just like tap your nails on it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's a thing. Hold on. Yes.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Someone just, I don't know, meditated or something. I don't know what they do when they watch ASMR.
I agree.
What do they do?
I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just like it's like lo-fi, but sounds instead of music.
I use lo-fi in the background, so is this like their background? Interesting. We should unpack that someday.
It's like when you what was it, the thing where like you stream somebody working so that you are, like when you're working from home, it helps keep you like focused and...
Does it?
Apparently that's a thing. That's definitely a thing.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and so I was like wondering if maybe that's, like it sounds like other people are in your vicinity doing things and maybe it like helps you feel more connected.
Maybe. I don't know.
That's a great, if you do ASMR and you feel like telling us like why, like it works for you, we're curious. Feel free to write in. We like friendship.
We do. And we're very curious people, and this will help us from falling down the rabbit hole in a place that is maybe inaccurate.
That is fair. Please give us better filtered information.
Yes.
Thank you.
We'd like accurate information, even if it's weird.
Yeah.
Give us weird information, please.
As long as it's accurate. Anyway,
Kaylee, we have a corrections corner.
I'm sorry. It was probably my fault.
It wasn't. It was me not understanding how to categorize a T. Kingfisher novel. And I was wrong in how I was like, I took a stab and it was like a 50-50 chance. And I was wrong.
But the love was there, and that's really
what
matters.
All right, are you ready?
Yes, please.
High fantasy is a genre of fantasy that takes place in a world unlike our own, that has its own rules, species, and physics. Low fantasy is a world that takes place within our own. So it is much like Earth, but laid over top you have magic, idealism, and other species.
This is interesting because then technically Tolkien is low fantasy?
Tolkien is high fantasy because it's not Earth. It's Middle Earth. It's just called Earth.
No, but I mean, it's technically like the T. Kingfisher books never say this is Earth.
Right. So those are high fantasy.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Oh,
and then like
I see.
Charles de Lint would be low fantasy.
The Dresden Files might be low fantasy.
Low fantasy. Paxenarian, high fantasy.
Yeah.
By the way, if you've ever read Paxenarian,
oh my gosh,
write in and we will automatically add you to the Discord. No support necessary.
That's accurate.
We want to talk to you. forever.
Like, it's just the club. It's the, we've read the book, The Deed of Paxenarian Club, and we're about new members. We love those books.
If you would cuddle with Pax in a snow-covered mountain, platonically, just because she's cool, same.
Yeah.
Join us.
Elizabeth Moon, man. She wrote those books, and they were, like, prototype, like, fantasy cliches, but she set all of them. Like, tropes. Not cliches, they're tropes.
I wonder if we went back and, like, did the timing. Because I think D&D came before Elizabeth mm-hmm. Moon, but then she set a lot of extra different tropes. Mm-hmm. Like, there are no real, like, witches as such in D&D, but the witches of Elizabeth Moon are the witches that are the prototypes for pretty much everything. And I do wonder if, like, she created that, or if there was, like, something in between. Like, maybe, like, a short story that only Elizabeth Moon read or something that, like, some, maybe, you know, super nerdy Tolkien person, D&D person can tell us.
I would believe. Yeah, please. Hey, anybody that's gone down that rabbit hole, we have not. And please tell us.
We would love to. Yes. Yeah. Again, we will offer you free access to the Discord so you can talk to us about it.
100%. We would love to. We should actually just talk about these books because they're great and we haven't talked about them in a while.
It's
so
true.
That
it's
might
true.
Be a Discord combo we should start.
We should do a favorite high fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
Just episode.
Yes.
Yes, we should. After we finish all the other episodes that we have just in the
docket. Let's add it to the list right now so we don't forget.
Kaylee, let's get started through one of the apps that I was actually using about 10 minutes before you arrived here today. And I think that you use it as well. Spotify.
It's true.
Do you use it for audiobooks?
I have. We've had this talk before. Okay. I don't know if it's ever made it onto, like, the air, but okay, just in case it hasn't. I read physically faster than my ears process sound. And unless I'm driving a long distance, I can't do podcasts or audiobooks because it frustrates me that I am receiving knowledge or information about the story
too slowly,
slower than I should be. It's just bonkers.
Kaylee, can I give you a quick tip and hack?
Yeah.
You can up the speed of the people talking.
It's true, but if I'm driving, yeah, it's fair. You know, you're not wrong, but then you lose something. You do. I feel like you do lose something.
I
do want to listen to the audiobook of Lesbian Necromancer Space
Harrow the Ninth.
I do.
I will say,
after I read it.
Obviously, for those of you who are longtime fans of this podcast, you know we love the Ninth House
series, the Locked Tomb series, yes.
By Tamsin Muir. The first book is called Gideon the Ninth, absolutely fantastic. Second book is called Harrow the Ninth, also absolutely fantastic. But Harrow the Ninth is very divisive because most of the book is written in second person. That's you walk down this hallway rather than I walk down or she walked down. So you end up feeling a little bit like confined by the story. There are a lot of people who don't like
second person
in general, and especially a lot of people who don't like it on audio. But I will say, Moira Quark, who does the audio narration for that book, is she takes Harrow the Ninth and she chews the scenery in a way that I have never heard an audiobook narrator do it.
Every time you talk about it, I just want to listen to it more. So, like, this is, I'm going to make an exception. I'm going to find a way to make this work for me.
Mm-hmm. I got it on Libby. You can probably.
That I can't. I just mean, like, my brain.
My brain. Yes.
Make my brain do the thing that I need it to do so I can enjoy this.
Anyway, Kaylee's going to eventually read the Moira Quark. Anyway, Spotify has audiobooks. And this is something, so I am actually not the main account holder on my Spotify account. So my husband is the main account holder and we have a family plan. So when you have a family plan for Spotify, you actually can't get the audiobook streaming deals that other people can, which is why I have not yet experienced this. My hope is that eventually they will let me, but right now that's a no. When I talk about this article from Publishers Weekly, please know that I'm speaking just from the analysis provided, and I do not know independently. It's not opening.
So, Publishers Weekly has reported, their initial positive results from their move into... From Spotify's move into model shift, I guess, and how they actually provide access to audiobooks.
Right.
So we did speak on this a bit ago, a few episodes ago, related to how Spotify is providing up to kind of like a sample of the book. Usually, I think it was a 15 hours.
Most books, that's actually the whole book. But yes, for books that we like, that's about a sample.
Oh, that's fair. So they're providing 15 hours of content to account holders a month.
For the right? Deed of Paxenarion trilogy, that's a sample. But for the Deed of Paxenarion, the first book, that might be most of the book.
I don't think so. I don't think so. 15 minutes?
15 hours.
15 hours. My brain didn't want to work. I'm sorry. It might be. Actually, you're right. It might be. But it's 15 hours a month, isn't it?
Yes. 15 hours a month for the main account holder on a Spotify account. So for our family plan, that's the person whose like card is attached. For you, I'm guessing it's just you.
So they say that users have accessed roughly 90,000 titles, with The Woman in Me by Britney Spears topping the list of the most listened to books. I would be curious about the runtime on that in the 15-hour range, honestly.
Good point. Like, are they selecting based on what will fit inside that 15 hours? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know for sure.
I'm very curious about their like the numbers in the titles and how that kind of aligns.
So for those who don't know, the Spotify situation is that you, with your normal Spotify account, if you pay for Spotify Premium, you automatically get 15 hours of audiobooks. But if you listen through that 15 hours, you can choose to re-up and get another 10 hours. So if you listen to The Woman in Me, again, I don't know how long that book is. We should look it up. But if you listen to The Woman in Me and it's more than 15 hours, you can then re-up and get another 10 hours and then finish listening to that book. And then, oh, well, you've got several more hours, so you might as well listen to another one. That's kind of how Spotify is assuming that you're going to use it. So are subscribers then choosing books that are fewer than 15 hours and then saying, hey, like, I'm going to pick this book, which is 14 hours, over this book, which is 16? Even though that's not a huge difference, it's a huge difference in my membership, and I won't have to pay extra. So are listeners doing that? That's a good question. I don't know.
I mean, and obviously that's the question that authors are asking, right? Honestly. So publishers, Spotify, are pushing this and saying it's great, and returns have been great. Mm-hmm. But have returns to the authors been great?
Specifically for indie authors is the question. So the next one that I had in this section was Writer Beware, which is a big scam watch thing for specifically writers. So they look at predatory publishers, they look at publishers that don't actually exist but that are soliciting things from people so that they're able to say, hey, don't engage with this publisher, they're a scam. Writer Beware recently released a report looking at Spotify itself, specifically for audiobooks, and said that the terms have shifted. And while indie audio writers, meaning like writers who wrote an indie book and then converted it to audio, haven't seen that much of a change yet because the changes are so dense, like they're written in legalese. Like your average indie author is not fluent in legalese. They don't know if this is going to be a problem in the long term. And so this is something that they reached out to Writer Beware, the blog, and said, hey, can you let your readers know that it's possible that the Spotify terms are not as good as they appear to be, because they're not as transparent as they could be. And that was something that I felt like it was really important for us to talk about because, specifically Findaway Voices is the app that Spotify uses for the indie audiobook services. And I thought that it was really important to talk about because a lot of authors these days are indie authors and they're doing pretty much just what they can on a freelance basis to get their book into audio. Are they getting screwed over? Big question mark. They don't know, which is kind of concerning. You would think that if they were doing well, they would know that they were doing well.
Yeah. I feel like that would be a little more obvious. Yeah, yes, 100%.
It's not. Which is sad.
Yeah. And then there's also the question on the... Writer Beware put out an article specifically that you were just talking about. In that mm-hmm. article, the terms have shifted so that it's maybe more upfront, but also it seems pretty bad. So the... new licensing language specifically essentially says that it's a non-exclusive but it's irrevocable. So essentially mm-hmm. you're giving them licensed at the rates that are included in the contract, which they can change. You're giving them access to your book. specifically, you're going to receive whatever your contracted compensation is until they choose to change the contract, which there's always language in them that say they can change it whenever they want. Mm-hmm. But separately, if for whatever reason, like say you're the only, they're the only like source of the content, and then they get an additional sponsorship or something, additional advertising revenue based on your content, mm-hmm. Your license is royalty free. You don't see any of it. So whether That's your content too. Is contingent on them getting that advertising revenue or not, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's not super. I think that there's every reason to be concerned. And Agreed. I do hope that that gets resolved and not just temporarily like set to the side until people stop paying attention.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. Unfortunately, we're talking about like a huge multimedia company versus a couple indie authors. So my hope is that that does get fixed. But I don't know. My hopes aren't super high just yet. My hope is that we'll see something, some big author be like, hey, you need to change this.
And come on, Brandon enough. Sanderson. You've done yes. it once. Do it again.
Brandon, save us. Moving on, I wrote in my notes that this is a sad but necessary story.
Oh my God. And it's one of those things where like, you're not surprised by, like, it was sad to see it all like in one place, but it's all things that I've seen or read about or heard about, like, anecdotally. So one of my friends in Tennessee, her mom used to work in the genealogy department at a library, and she ended up helping out in the library as well. And depending on where you're at, it can just be rough. It can be really difficult. And then you've got, you know, what we had discussed before about libraries as safe spaces and community spaces and all of the things that are being sort of transitioned onto their shoulders. I mean, it's very difficult. It's a very stressful job. So the article Annie's talking about here is from the School Library Journal, and it's discussing school and public librarians. So like not just public librarians, but in all avenues, and the harassment that they're facing from general public, but also people that are specifically targeting them around questions of the content in the library or the collection, book banning proponents that are attacking them personally. It's very sad.
Agreed. Yeah. I was speaking to a librarian a couple months ago. We had talked about how Maryland is kind of a safe space. We haven't actually seen any state-level book bans, petitions getting brought. But she was talking about how essentially a lot of people think, oh, you know, Maryland is a haven. Like, we're doing fine. Maryland is where Kaylee and I are based. And she's like, no, people come into the library and are jerks to us about books and book bans, even though Maryland is this kind of liberal bastion, even though there is this like perception that Maryland is going to be able to protect its people in that way. And she's like, it's just not the case. Like, people come in and harass us all the time. And that made me feel really, really, really sad, because they're public servants. They're just trying to do their jobs. As community organizers, community space facilitators, as, you know, also librarians, you know, managing and dealing with collections, this shouldn't be a thing that they have to deal with, but right now it is. And the School Library Journal went deep onto all of the specific things that the librarians are having to deal with. We're not going to go all the way in there because we value our sanity.
It's sad.
It is sad.
You'll have the link if you want to, but like, protect mm-hmm. yourself. Like, it's yes. not like, it's not going to go like into excessive detail, but right. it is a person providing a quote about their specific experience yeah. and bad things that have happened to them. So, you know. Just protect yourself as you consider what you want to look more in depth into.
We talked about this a little bit in our season 3 opener about how we were really grateful that these kinds of things are getting more attention. Unfortunately, things getting attention is not a straight step into them getting fixed. So more attention is not necessarily bad, but it also is not necessarily fixing the problem. So we're going to keep talking about it until we start to see change and until we start to see more good things happen for librarians. Because I think if you're listening to this podcast, you know that librarians deserve all of the good things in the world. They are doing all of the work that needs to be done.
They are really laboring in the community, honestly. Like, I mean, not everyone everywhere is perfect, but like, in general, like, you're not in it for the dollars by any means. So we have a good thing now. Definitely a good thing.
Go for it.
Unequivocally, in my opinion. So the New York Times has an article from some Wilson Wong wrote an article in the New York Times talking about a new literary prize. So this one actually...
Tell me about it, Katie.
I would be happy to, Annie. So this particular literary prize is actually going to prisons. So we've talked about prison libraries before. This particular literary prize is looking for the winners within the walls of the prisons. Like they'll work with existing relationships that they've already formed for prisons that are actually promoting these prison libraries that they've already like connected and made, you know, established these relationships with. So they'll go in and they'll have like voting like sessions and have like discussions and find out like which one of the different potential categories was the favorite in that particular area. So that was incredibly cool. I do appreciate the, again, reminder that people are in prison for rehabilitation. That is the point of prisons. And so like locking up a person in the dark with nothing does not facilitate that.
Rehabilitation, not punishment.
Correct.
Agreed. My New York Times subscription on my tablet is gone. So we're going to have to trust Kaylee that that's what that article is.
So a jury of
details, Kaylee?
I would be happy to. I'll read you the first little blurb. So over a period of 6 months, a jury of inmates in prisons across six states are going to be reading, debating books, and then voting on the winner of a new award, which is called the Inside Literary Prize.
Mm-hmm. So I like that Inside Literary Prize.
Yeah.
That's a good name for a prison literature award.
I thought that was clever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this was actually founded by Freedom Reads. So again, this is a nonprofit that has already like working with prisons to build prison libraries.
I think we spoke at least in passing about Freedom Reads when we talked about prison libraries.
Exactly. Well, we have. Yeah,
link to that episode in our show notes.
Yeah. So that's the nonprofit that actually establishes those like relationships and actually builds the libraries and populates them with books.
Right.
So it makes perfect sense that we've talked about it before. Mm-hmm. But yeah, anyway, so the National Book Foundation, which is also one of the founders, and then the Center for Justice Innovation, an organization that is working to provide resources in general to underserved communities. So
like it's a prison reform plus National Book Foundation coming together.
Yeah, there's three different organizations working together to get this off the ground. So I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, I like that. Moving on to our favorite news section, celebrating marginalized peoples in publishing. A long overdue congratulations to Hannah Bond, who you can now read about in depth. I should not have said that because, again, New York Times not working on my.
So, in The Life and Times of Hannah Crafts, which was assembled specifically like over many years by Greg Hachimovich. Something along those lines. We will put this article and you can see how his name is spelled. I'm sure that I mangled it. I'm very sorry. I did my best.
Sorry, Greg.
It's Greg is actually what we mispronounced. I nailed it. It's like Greg or something like that.
Right.
But anyway, so this was like just a fascinating read. But like the guy who pulled this stuff together, like he went deep and like... he was able to track down like a likely candidate for this. And ultimately, I'm pretty sure like it's obviously nothing's like 100%, but it feels fairly conclusive. The evidence that he has drawn together for this, the actual person behind this novel book that was written by somebody that had professed to be a slave, an escaped slave or a former slave. So it's very good. And the fact that, you know, she was as articulate as she is led a lot of people to doubt the premise. But the historian was able to really pull the pieces together and actually explain like X, Y, and Z. Like, this is why, you know, her family was very much about having their house slaves specifically. That's so gross. Oh, no. Their house slaves educated. And then there was a school next door and so on and so forth. And she was familiar with the literature. Yeah. And
it's one of those things where their hearts were in the wrong place, but then like something good came out of it.
Yeah.
So this was a formerly enslaved person who wrote a best-selling and widely celebrated novel. And people just doubted that she could have been a formerly enslaved person because of how articulate she was. And this historian has now tracked down and been like, no, no, this was a really genuinely formerly enslaved person. So you can now finally read her biography and celebrate her. And we'll put that biography on our bookshop list because we truly want to celebrate her. I mean, hell yeah, for educated women who are just being like, F you, I'm going to do what I'm going to do.
Yeah, and good for her. I mean, like, she first off, again, she escaped.
Yeah,
like that, absolutely. She got away and then she stayed away. Like, good for you.
Yeah,
good for you, awesome. Man. I'm so glad that we can now read your life in your words.
Yeah. Again, you'll have to do the details on this one because
it's New York
Times. I've neglected to renew my NYT subscription on my tablet, which I'm reading from today. Angela Ruiz Robles invented an early e-reader. This is one of the New York Times Overlooked Obituaries, which is a series that they started several years ago talking about how there are women in the world who have done things that have not been celebrated for them.
And now we need to celebrate.
And we do. So this is a very early e-reader that came with like, it's almost like a Victorian steampunk e-reader, which is super cool.
Like it is so cool. Like the description, the pictures that I found, like so cool. Yeah. But yeah, so this was actually when Annie says early, it was invented in 1948.
Yeah.
Just to be clear.
Yeah.
It's the Encyclopedia Mechanica.
Love that name too.
What a baller name. Yes.
God, yes.
I think one of my favorite things about this is that, so to be fair, so Angela Ruiz Robles was, and there are some amazing quotes in here, by the way, like this lady, what a boss.
Yeah, we'll link this in our show notes. It's a great article about an overlooked obituary.
And she was cracking, like her quotes were cracking me up. Like I'll have to, I'll just come back to that later. But anyway, like, she really wanted this to blow up, and she wanted it to blow up in Spain specifically.
Yeah.
And so, like, she wanted, because she knew it was going to be a good thing, and she knew it was going to be, like, a cool thing, and that, like, people would, like, flock to it. And she's like, no, it's for Spain, because, like, she couldn't get companies to pick it up. But, like, there were American companies that expressed interest, and she was like, no, it has to be Spain. Here. I just like, thought
I'm helping my people. Screw you.
Even though they don't want it.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool.
So good for you, man. Like, agreed. You are fantastic. Also, let me just find my favorite quote in here.
Yes, please do.
We come to this world not only to live our life as comfortable as possible, but to worry about others so that they can benefit from something offered by us.
I like that.
I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah.
My other thing was, This is my favorite quote, though.
Okay.
Can a good inventor be a good housewife at the same time? Yes, yes. But it is necessary that the servants or people around her do not force her into extensive conversations of ordinary things. Silence is essential as it facilitates the gestation of those ideas which then favor the progress of the world.
Introverted queen.
Don't bother me while I'm working. It's so good. What a boss.
Love that.
So she was actually awarded.
I can have it all as long as everyone is quiet.
That's right. You have to do, one thing. I ask for one thing.
Yeah, right.
It's comical. Anyway, so perfect. She was actually awarded the Cross of the Alfonso X the Wise for her innovations in education, research, and social work. Sadly, her e-reader was not picked up, but it was awarded in 2018. They actually named a street after her in Madrid.
Oh, congratulations. Yep. Long overdue.
Absolutely.
Well worth it.
Absolutely.
Congratulations to all marginalized peoples and workers in publishing. You deserve more than pizza, certainly.
But at least pizza.
At least pizza.
And now for our favorite non-news section. Annie, what are you reading?
Thank you for asking, Kaylee. I am reading Leigh Bardugo's Alex Stern series. Have I talked to you about this? On the show, specifically?
On the show, no.
Okay.
In the wild. In the wild, yes.
It's so fantastic. It's like, so Leigh Bardugo, you might have heard of her Shadow and Bone series. It's a hit Netflix show. It's very romantasy, sort of, well, it's very fantasy of like a young woman stuck in a world where she has to fight all of the bad guys and she's not happy about it. And the Locked Tomb, oh my god, that's Gideon the Ninth, which is a whole separate thing, sorry. the Alex Stern series is an adult's. Alex Stern is in her 20s, and she is stuck in this absolutely insane dark academia world where she is trying to stop a bunch of undergraduate co-eds from destroying the world, and she is fed up with their shit.
I'll be honest, when you were describing this before and I like looked it up, I was like, I'm kind of really excited about about this.
There are some tropes of the dark academia, like a couple of the YA tropes where like she has some, you know, co-ed freshman roommates and she's like having to deal with the fact that they want to have a party and she doesn't want to have a party and they have to decorate and she doesn't want to decorate and like one girl's her super good friend, but then this girl like goes to a party by herself and gets drunk and gets in a lot of trouble and there's video evidence and blah 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 and like things happen, but also she's fighting demons and breaking bones and is not happy about that either. And her mentor gets sucked into a hell dimension, and that's annoying. And also, she's running drugs for the local drug kingpin. Let's not talk about that for now. We'll talk about it later. Like, she's so, like, she's an adult dealing with bullshit. And I love that.
It's like, I just came here. I thought I was going to have to deal with student loans. No. This is nonsense.
No, yeah, it's fantastic. It's one of those ones where, like, I want there to be a TV series about this show, but I want them to do it like well. Like, Alex Stern is fucked up. Like, she went to juvie for prostitution at 14 because her boyfriend trafficked her across the city and then also got a bunch of drugs into her, and then she killed that man. Like, she has so much fucking.
I feel like the writing team for Jessica Jones
yes would do really well. Oh my, yes. Okay, go watch Jessica Jones and then go read Alex Stern and then you'll get it.
Then you'll be ready to fight everyone.
You will be ready to fight every penis-wielding motherfucker in the, not all of them, but some of them. Anyway, so
many of ours are decent.
Yes, but a lot of the ones in power at institutionally empowered places do not deserve the power that they have, and do and can and shall abuse it. And Alex Stern is bringing that whole fucking shit down.
Love it.
Love that for her. So that's, I just like basically described the first book. I'm on the second book now, I'm about halfway through. Yep. And she is, she's got a couple besties now. Like, she has help in her journeys, which is good because now her journeys are becoming infinitely more complicated. Like, she's in her sophomore year at Yale, even though she's like significantly older than everyone around
non-traditional
her.
Student, sure.
Right. And she's in her sophomore year at Yale and having to deal with like super misogynistic teachers and also this like one cop friend that she has who is like, I feel like a lot of these magical items that you're using to track down these murderers were created to track down slaves, Alex. Why are you using these? And Alex has to be like, I will destroy them when I'm done. Help me finish this in the meantime. Like, she has to, like, grapple with these real, genuine questions of, like, using magic is a problem. It's a bad thing to do. Bad people have used these things before. How do you approach that? And she, as an adult with a bunch of other shit going on, has to grapple with that. And it's not YA at all. But also, like, as the, you know, academic girly that I am, it feels very much like it's speaking to me. I don't know why that I put a but in there. Also, as the it's not YA and it's dark academia. And I really love it. And I there are only two books out right now. I don't know that there's going to be a third. Obviously, I haven't finished the second book, so I don't know if that's for a reason. The second book was released a couple years ago. There hasn't been a third like announcement or anything, but I'm hoping that there will be. I love Alex Stern with my whole heart, and I also love her bestie Pamela Dawes, who is the research assistant of the magical system, and Pamela Dawes would really prefer if everyone would just leave her alone so she could work on her dissertation, but no, she has to go save everybody and like shut down all of the power to this one building that they're trying to sneak into. Okay, now leave her alone so she can go use the library. And I'm like, Pammy, I get you.
It's fair.
I love them. Anyway.
I do want to give you some hope.
Yes.
It took 6 years for the third book in the Gentleman Bastard sequence to come out.
6 years.
Yeah. And then after that, 10 years.
Oh my god.
Because it's coming out this year, the fourth book. It came, the third book came out, just to be clear, in 2013. This book is coming out in 2024.
I don't know what gender Leigh Bardugo identifies as, so I'm just going to say sir/ma'am. Please don't make me wait that long. I love Alex Stern so much. Please give me more, Alex Stern.
I also just, general, I haven't had a plug for this one in a while either, so read Paxenarian.
Yeah.
Read Adita Paxenarian. Also,
you want a badass woman?
Yeah. And then if you want complicated, awful twists, not super tropey, like tropes get turned on their head, The Gentleman Bastard sequence.
Okay.
By Scott Lynch.
Got it. Perfect. We'll add that to our book list. If you are looking for any, we will have them on our bookshop page. You can find that on our link tree. Kaylee, do you have a Kaylee coda for us today?
Read books. That's what I got.
Perfect. Thanks for listening to The Ink Sink. I have been Annie.
I'm still Kaylee.
I keep forgetting that you don't like it when I do that. If you want to follow us on social media or follow our podcast on and your favorite podcast app or support us on any platform that you would like to, you can do all of that.
Because we are your favorite podcast.
Yeah, obviously. Right?
Right.
Right. And you can find all of those links on our link tree. And you can find the link tree wherever you found this podcast. Thank you for listening. We will see you next time.